able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Hour three, about 10 minutes in, and we're going to have Tony Lacey in a minute and catch up and get you set up for the 24-hour postponement, getting the Horse of All Age sale started at Keeneland. Today, let me slip in a, as I'm thumbing through, I thought I had it. Racing today, fairgrounds running today, and nope. I don't know how this happens, but I know it's here somewhere. Some action for today. I'll find it at some point. Wanted to give you a little advance on today. It's nice to have the fairgrounds on these Mondays. I will give you one performance. There we go. Well, now I won't because Tony is with us. Tony Lacey and the January sale. The calendar kicks off. We're all going to have to wait 24 hours, but that's okay. Tony, Happy New Year.
And to you, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on.
Not at all. I just wanted to give everybody the details, let you discuss how everything came down, and of course the weather that paralyzed Kentucky for a good 48 hours and that had some serious issues to deal with and made it dangerous and hard for people to come look at the horses. So made sense to postpone things and push it back all 24 hours.
Yeah, honestly, last week it's like when everything is quiet and going relatively smoothly, you feel like, okay, what's around the corner? And again, we had forecasted snow for Thursday. We knew it was going to be fairly significant, but we got around 10 inches of snow here around around the Lexington area, and it all fell within about three hours. So it really, the snow plows couldn't get ahead of it. Traffic was snarled up. So, and then we had an 8-degree high or 8-degree low that night, which you knew the next morning the roads were terrible, and it would have been really challenging for farms to get staff to work and horses gotten to the sale here itself. Horse vans were canceled out of state coming to Kentucky. So really, at the end of the day, we had to make a fairly quick and calculated decision based on a lot of feedback from not only our clients but even our staff that we can do this, because operationally it's not just a flick of a switch and move it back. So we appreciate everybody's help and understanding to do this. If you saw Keeneland today, you'd wonder what happened that was so bad, because it's beautiful, it's dry, it's cool, but it's January is January. So we're ready and we're excited for a really good sale starting tomorrow.
Give us a feel for the expectations and the variety. This is, to me, these are always interesting because you got mares and foal, you've got the short yearlings. It's such an interesting mixed bag. You've got stallion prospects. It's always a kind of a potpourri.
It is. It's, and really, we always look at it as a sort of a secondary sale, a mini version of November. You've got a lot of the same type of stock. But again, there's probably not the headliners you might have in November sometimes. But in saying that, you've got a lot of real deep quality here that would fit many people's portfolios, their broodmare bands, their racing stables. So it allows people who have raced over the weekend or over the end of the year, and also to consider how strong the sales were, because a lot of the entries for the January sale were closed before the start of the November sale. So that sort of powered a lot of our supplements. We've a lot of over 120 supplementary entries into the sale, which is quite large. So it's a great variety of horses, a lot of quality. We're starting into a new year, so it's obviously if people are a little fresh. We recovered from rested and relaxed over after the holidays, and new tax year. You know, almost a lot of these broodmare prospects closer to the breeding season. So there's a lot of factors that come into play that make January sort of a unique environment, and I think a lot of people really enjoy it. It's an easy sale to work for buyers, and relatively easy for sellers as well. So there's a lot of enthusiasm on the grounds, a lot of positivity, and for good reason. I think we go into this sale and this year with, you know, with a lot of the purses around the country are up, the sales have been very strong, the racing, the core of racing, I think in essence has been revigorated over the last 24 months. So I think we've got a lot to look forward to going forward.
One of the things that there's always for me when it comes to the January February portion and the all age variety, the short yearlings, and the difference between the way the yearlings presented in September, you wouldn't necessarily think that. 90 days, 100 days is that big of a difference, but it is, and it'll be always worth tracking to see who the buyers are impressed with among the short yearlings that'll be going through, and the catalog structure. Lay that out for us too, Tony. How the 4 days will unfold in terms of variety.
Well, and the way it's laid out, that the first book is generally the higher quality horses, with the book two is sort of the, and wouldn't say lesser, they're just the next grade down in many cases. But with some of the supplements, we have some sort of solid supplements in the second book as well. But in essence, the book one is the primary focus of many people. In saying that, the consigners sell either one day or the other, so you'll find that like Lang's End will sell on many others will sell it on day one, and then a lot of other consigners on day two. So, and that'll be in book two as well. So it helps us with through the flow and the switching of the barns and how people are able to get through them. But again, book one, I think is a very strong representation of what the sale has been in the past. And, everything is mixed in together, by the way, as well. So you got racing prospects, short yearlings, as you've mentioned, broodmares. So it's a little bit of a Pandora's box of what you can find in each barn, but it's great. And I think it really is, relaxed and fun sale to work overall for everybody.
Haven't had a chance really to dig through, but I'm sure that we'll look at some prospect lists, and we'll look for some some catalog updates, because invariably there's been enough racing, and the racing kind of pretty much goes on, and so there might be some siblings that are enhanced. There might be some broodmare prospects that have been enhanced as well. So going to really look forward to the 4 days. We start at 10 o'clock each day.
Correct. At 10 o'clock each day. And Ron, I would imagine we'll go through about 7 o'clock in the evening. So full days, plenty of action, a lot of people on the grounds. Great to see Europeans back on the grounds. And again, and a great variety of buyers. So I think it'll be plenty of action, on, especially on the high-quality horses. As you say, a lot of good prospects from impressive maiden winners like in Belgrade, dam of grade one winners like Kukola, who's the dam of search results, Bella Vita, who was second in the Gopher One on December 4th, Miss J. McKay, who was Abizana, won that stake down in Gulfstream on the last day of the year. So, yeah, you go through, there's a plethora, you know, Saucy Lady T, third in the Spinaway, Adirondack and Schuylerville and Saratoga last year. So there's a lot of quality through it. And again, if anybody wants to peruse through the catalog, I think they'll be pleasantly surprised, and something for everybody, which is more important.
Well, and you also should note, nice smattering of regional programs represented as well in the catalog, and there's a lot to keep track of here, and everybody's got their own. I'll give you an example. There's Motown yearlings that I'm very anxious to see. We've got a colt, a Motown colt, that's at Country Life right now. So you track the stallions that you used. You want to see how they're going to sell, and it helps make you, give you some direction and potential decision. A lot of that kind of thing that goes on. You're just gauging the marketplace. And you mentioned on the grounds, this is probably a sale that, particularly when it comes to the brood mares, that remote access and the online system, I imagine, people know what they're, what they're dealing with when it comes to brood mares, certainly, that have got produce. How active in a January market is the online portion?
Well, and again, it's every year is a little different. I thought, again, we're just referring back to November, because prior the September and November sales, we had a history of the previous year of what the activity was online and phone bidding. What we found is that the more people that are on the grounds, the activity online is actually just a shade less, but not much. It's been very, very active. What we've also been really encouraged by is the interest levels from Japan and Australia, on certain hits, that they may have somebody locally to look at the horse. And also a lot of principals like to bid on horses that they're interested in, rather than through an agent, to have their agents do all the work and do the homework. And they like to have access to being able to bid and make those decisions at the last minute themselves. So I think we found the phone bidding and online bidding traffic to be very healthy in September, November, and I don't see that changing in January either.
Tony Lacey with us from Keeneland. And Tony, I did see on the racing portion, I saw that the spring calendar was laid out. Looks like a terrific spring, which frankly is not that far away. But lay out the sales season for us here for the first half of the year.
Yes, the first half of the year, obviously, is January. This will take care. We have a horses and racing age sale again. We've yet to solidify the date, but keep a close eye on it, because we're looking at, it'll be the weekend before a week before the Kentucky Derby. Here it'll be close at right at the end of the meet here. We had it before last year, but I think we want to invigorate this sale, and it's perfectly placed again in the year, a little bit like the end of the November sale, where people coming out of the winter season that want to get ready for the upcoming spring and summer season, no matter what jurisdiction they're moving to. And a lot of them are staying here in Kentucky right now, but it's a good time to trade out horses or source horses for your racing stable. That'll be at the end of the meet, as I say, here in April. So we're really excited, because racing and sales, we work very, very closely together. Sometimes we can be perceived as a little bit of a different entity, but Gatewood, Bell next door here, we're always in and out of each other's offices, working how we can help each other. And I think we're really excited about that prospect going forward. And again, we'll be doing inspections for the September sale, and again for November as we plan forward. But our next sale will be at the end of April, beginning of May, but most likely end of April.
Excellent. Well, best of luck to everybody, consigners and prospective buyers. And tomorrow, 10 o'clock, and I'm amused by the pictures with the snow, and it's funny. It's almost like Keeneland can't really take a bad picture, no matter what, right? It doesn't matter. It could be icy, and it could be beautiful fall weather. It could be, you know, drizzly. It always looks beautiful, no matter what.
Well, we're very fortunate. A lot of us were out during the middle of the heaviest of the snow, just taking a lot of photos. So it's certainly we pinch ourselves every day we come here.
Tony Lacy, everybody. The Keeneland January sale, just a 24-hour delay to make sure that everybody gets a chance to look at everything they hope to see in preparation for purchase starting tomorrow. We'll keep tabs, and we'll only have one day of results to talk about with Sid Fernando, but I'm sure we will on Wednesday. Thanks again, Tony. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Enjoy the week. Good luck.
Tony Lacy and the action at Keeneland. We'll stay here, of course, and close out probably this last half hour with Joe Clancy. And I owe Joe, because we didn't get to Joe toward the end of last year. And one of the stories that I thought we would certainly broach with Joe from over the weekend, the word came out from Terry Breon. And, of course, with the Eclipse discussion, we're going to circle through to Steeplechase, and the Mean Queen is obviously your chase champion, but the word came that Kerry is going to bypass a Cheltenham trip for the Mean Queen, and instead will hope to do it in 2023 instead, targeting she's looking to start the year in the Iroquois at Percy Warner instead. So COVID continues to kind of interrupt and throw the roadblock up here and there. I think I've got Joe Clancy in the background.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Joe, I'm good. Happy, healthy to you and everybody. Thanks so much for the calendar. I'm looking up at Whitmore, the terrific poster boy for the first month of the year in the This Is Horse Racing calendar. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We thought he was a fitting send-off for a cool horse that we've followed for years, it seems like now. And looking back, maybe we should have done a sunny California or sunny Florida photo, because it's kind of chilly everywhere at the moment.
Well, I wanted to catch up with you for a few different reasons. We did not get to you at the end of the 2021, the last couple of weeks, few weeks, to kind of summarize the year, but I figured I could start some things with you, including the Eclipse conversation. But first of all, you had a nice Christmas, New Year's.
Yes, it was great, actually. Got to see family, got to chill out and relax a little bit, and calm down from the rush of everything everybody does. But, everybody's in good shape.
You didn't lose your Christmas tree off the back of a pickup?
No, that was only Sean. Mine actually fit in the Subaru this year. So in the Subaru, I didn't even have to tie it on the roof. So,
Well, it did. Well, I appreciate the fact that you're not littering, the highways and byways of Maryland with trees. It is funny though, because I did talk to, was it Tom? It was Tom. Tom's last visit of the year, and he was down by you. You guys had some editorial meetings, and I absolutely humorously, and I was just kidding, said to him, well, did Joe drive you by the place where they got the Christmas tree for Rockefeller Center? And Tom was like, oh, yeah. I burst out laughing. You were so captivated by that story out of Elkton. It was unbelievable.
Well, there's a little more backstory to it. It is a half a mile from my house, and it's in the yard of some friends of ours whose kids went to school with our kids, and, you know, we've driven past that house and that tree for 20-some years now, and suddenly it was famous. And the day they came down, well, they set it up for a long time, but the final day when they put it on the truck, the whole neighborhood turned out. We had a tailgate party and had a big send-off for the tree. So not much happens in our neighborhood, so that was big news.
Well, you know, I don't know why I discovered this, but around when you were doing that, I think I looked something up, and it turned out that there had been... the tree from one of the early years when they first started putting it from my hometown, from Manchester, Connecticut. And I had never come across that tidbit. But it was because of you, Joe, because you were just so gleeful about
happy to help wherever I can. And obviously there's a little bit of a racing connection with Guy Torsilleri, who's chairman of the Far Hills Races. His company always goes to get the tree, so... I had heard that it was in Elkton, and clearly it's not in downtown Elkton, which there isn't much of, but they were being really secretive about it. And I texted Torsilleri and said, okay, where is this thing? And he wouldn't tell me. And in about 15 minutes, I drove around the neighborhood and found it. So, you know, he was impressed with the detective work.
How did you figure it out?
Well, there aren't. It has to be a pretty good-sized tree. And he gave me a little bit of hint and said he had just gotten off the phone with the police chief of Newark, Delaware, I'm like, well, then it has to be up here near where I live, because that's, you know, in the Fair Hill kind of corner of Maryland, which is technically Elkton, but it's much closer to the, you know, the town of Newark, Delaware and things. So I'm like, okay, if they have to come through Newark, it has to be up this way somewhere. And I, you know, on my way to work, I did a little bigger circle than I normally do, and there they were. Yeah, it was good news.
That's great.
Around our neighborhood for a week or more.
Unbelievable. I love it. I'm glad I got a chance to bring it up, because I was so amused. Every time I looked up on Twitter, there was this is where this, here's the tree, and here's where the tree came from, and here's the stump of the tree, and here's the equipment that's going to grind the stump, and it's the only person I can think of that is as fascinated by this kind of thing would be Seth Merrow. That's Seth's kind of coverage. Well, you heard me. You know, I wanted to slip in a news story too. Ideally, and I was going to bring up Joel Rosario with Mig, but we were running late. I'll get to Rosario in a second with you. But let's start our eclipse conversation logically with chasing and the Mean Queen and the story that broke over the weekend that she will not go to Cheltenham, but that just means we get to see her a little bit more often domestically.
Yeah, you understand it if once you sort of get into the logistics. If she commits to going over there and then something goes haywire, even more haywire, COVID-wise, or if the owners can't go or whatever, you've put two seasons at risk. So, you know, I see the reasoning behind it and why they would make that call for, you know, a little selfishly, yeah, we get to see her hopefully here this spring in America, as opposed to going over to try to make some history in England.
I assume obviously Mean Queen and Snap Decision 1-2, lay out your steeplechase votes.
Yeah, I mean, she was pretty, you know, she earned it in the end. I mean, you were, like everybody, I think we were all wanted one more race. One more race at level weights would have been fun to see, I think. She certainly earned it, makes a little history. Snap Decision is still really good. It's fun to have two really good horses in the division for, you know, kind of for a change. You know, it's not necessarily one big dominant horse. And third, I went Bedrock. I just thought I was really impressed with his, you know, he's a notch below, but he did win a nice race in October for Naylor and Teal Murphy, and, you know, had tried Snap Decision in Iroquois, you know, and finished third. You know, he's not at that level, but is a nice horse.
Mean Queen, absolutely, and Snap Decision, second. From a policy standpoint in my voting, I very frequently will use the third slot. You know, as I've explained for years, the first place vote is the only vote that matters in the accumulation of the tally. The rest of it's window dressing. But I use the third sometimes, and I did it very notably with a couple of human and horse categories. I actually put down royal third. And there weren't very many horses in the division that won three races. Went 3-for-4 with the second. Had a very nice, the mayor had a very nice campaign and finished it winning the PPAC. And I thought, you know what? Down Royal, there's a little, you know, a little salute.
Yeah, she had a cool year. In a normal year, that campaign is good enough to be the, you know, filly or mare champion and people chase side, but not when the Mean Queen is around, that's for sure.
Exactly. All right. And we're going to come back to the Mean Queen at the end of this discussion. Let's go to the top, Joe, and start us off with your 2-year-old male and 2-year-old females.
I landed on Corniche in the mail just because you can't argue with 3 starts, 3 wins, the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, I think we all wanted to see the showdown with Jack Christopher, and it just wasn't meant to be. So, you know, I think you can't argue with that campaign at all. The filly was my vote was Echo Zulu, kind of, you know, same thing. She was really good. I felt kind of privileged that we got to see her twice at Saratoga. On our way up that ladder, you know, the power kind of the first crop of Gunrunner, it was something to see.
The Corniche and Echo Zulu are obviously both slam dunks. For second and third, I went Papa Cap. The more I looked at Papa Cap's season, you know, the Corniche, if Corniche is a slam dunk, well, Papa Cap needs to be, you know, seriously considered. And how many 2-year-olds, you know, make 5 starts these days? So I put Papa Cap second and Jack Christopher third. You know who kind of wormed her way into my heart and ballot was Twilight Gleaming. I put her second behind Echo Zulu and Juju's Map third.
Yeah, I think sometimes you lose sight of horses that finish second, you know, like Papa Cap. I mean, he's twice he loses to Corniche, which, you know, those aren't wins, but those are pretty good efforts. You know, maybe those efforts are better than some other horses' wins, depending on where they happen. So, yeah, I think you got to go that way a little bit. And again, you're just sort of looking at second and third place don't necessarily count in the final, you know, award tally, but it is kind of nice to fine and horses like that and suss them out. I mean, and on the fillies, I kind of used Juju's Map and the other Baffert filly, Ida or Edda, I thought was
okay.
Again, had a very good year too.
The 3-year-old males, and this has been a category, you know, while I think ultimately the scale, you know, tips to essential quality, there's a lot of interesting sidebar discussions that are going to surround this. How'd you lay out the males?
Yeah, this is one the guys sitting, NFL fans today are sitting around discussing all the what-ifs between the Chargers and the Raiders. You know, I think crazy people are going to sit around and discuss who's your 3-year-old male. I went essential quality, 1, Medina Spirit, 2, Life Good, 3. I just thought he, essential quality, kind of kept that campaign going and ran through the summer where Medina Spirit, you know, didn't. He could have come to Saratoga, you know, and you could have seen them run against each other again and didn't, you know, and I think that essential quality campaign was really good, you know. The other horse, Medina Spirit, finished ahead of him in the Breeders' Cup, but, you know, neither horse won there. I think if either one of them won, then it's a little different story.
That's a discussion worth having overall. You can certainly utilize essential quality and Medina Spirits with the two, you know, with the two head-to-heads in the Derby and in the Classic. And I agree. you know, when it comes to the classic, the winner, you know, the winner of a race is most important. If the principals are involved head to head, okay, that's fine, but not when they're both also rans. To me, it's not that, you know, it's not as important a distinction. Essential Quality had the kind of 3-year-old campaign that, you know, is easily worthy of a championship. I actually put Life is Good second, and that ended up surprising me. I did not head into the balloting expecting to have Life is Good that high. And I put Hot Rod Charlie third. But Life is Good, you know, there's a lot there. There's a lot of meat on that bone.
Yeah, for sure. It's frustrating that we didn't see more of him. It's not his fault. You know, it would have been fun to see him take on those horses at different times of the year. But, you know, again, look, hopefully we get to see him a little bit more this year, you know. Yeah, when you get mailed or emailed these batch of PPs, you look at all these horses again and probably it gives you a fresh perspective on all of them. And yeah, you wouldn't, you know, thumb your nose at that campaign he had at all. Like, good.
Well, he did, and he did, you know, he did a little of everything. I mean, he had, yeah, you know, he had a cameo on the Triple Crown Trail with the Sham and San Felipe wins. And then, you know, when he had the time off in the middle of the year, you know, he came back refashioned, and focused on sprinting. And, you know, let's be honest, Jackie's Warrior and him in that Jerkins, they were virtually, you know, inseparable. And I think, you know, if you run that race a few more times, Life is Good wins, you know, his share. And obviously, I mean, at least for me, when we get to the sprinting, Jackie's Warrior, I never wavered with him as a champion. So anyway, Life is Good, you know, then comes back with the Kelso against the Elders. I like that he faced Elders twice. That deserves some credit. You know, don't forget about that part of the equation. So there it is. How about the girls?
This was tricky, I thought. You kind of, you could make a case for several. I landed on Malathot. Just I thought her campaign was good enough, you know, and a notch above some of the others. She ran really well in the Breeders' Cup. Doesn't win, but ran really well, you know, and I think that kind of nudged her up to me. There and the Kentucky Oaks win and the early stuff she had. I love that she, you know, she got beat in the coaching club, but then came back and ran a better race in the Alabama, I thought, you know, and cool to see. So to me, she was there. Search Results was my second, and where did I go third? Clairiere was third.
Yeah, Search was that. We're identical. Malathot, Search Results, Clairiere. Nice group, and
yeah, there was some depth there, though. You know, it kind of just went that. Yep. There were some quality horses there for sure.
Well, and it was a slightly funny year for the fillies in that, to some degree, they seem to come in and out of form too, and it's kind of you look at the group as a whole, and you know, you look at a horse like Bella Sophia. I mean, she's a 3-year-old, and she had her moments and got good. You know, I ended up not finding a place for her, frankly, in either category. But you know, she enhanced the overall impression of the division.
Yeah, and then the same thing with some of the turf fillies. You know, to me added depth to it. But I'm like, not quite what you think about for the overall Eclipse Award in that category for sure.
Well, as we introduced the conversation, a lot of categories were slam dunks. That included the older male and older female, where, I mean, Nixco and Latruska seemingly had this wrapped up, you know, even before the Breeders' Cup, even though I suppose if Nixco had been beaten, you know, that maybe that, I don't know. I guess if Maxfield beats him in the Classic, that, you know, maybe that change. I don't know.
Yeah, would it take, if one of the 3-year-olds beat him, it probably doesn't change the equation. But if you know, somebody jumped up and won from out of this division, then maybe it changes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if Maxfield had run there, or if our collector had won, or something like that, maybe you would start having a little more conversation about it.
Exactly. So same for the record, Nixco, then Maxfield, then Silver State, and Latruska, She Dares the Devil. And I gave the Japanese horse a little wink, Marsh Lorraine. I put her third. You know, that was kind of cool.
Man, amazing, right? I try to stick by, you got to run more than once in America to get
yep.
on my Eclipse ballot, but sometimes it's tricky.
Agreed. Agreed. I feel the same way.
There's a devil as time goes by, and then the boys I went next to go, Maxfield, Art Collector.
Okay. Yeah, Silver State and Art Collector are going to get third place votes. Gets us to the sprint category, and I, you know, CC with her exploit, I think tipped the scales. Obviously, ahead of Gamine. I put Bells the one third. So CC, Gamine, Bells the one. And on the male side, like I said, Jackie's Warrior to me was just an absolute trooper. Aloha West came into the picture late, but I could only put him second. And I put Golden Pal third. I wanted some recognition for, you know, I know he only ran, you know, three times North America, once, of course, you know, a trip abroad. But I put Golden Pal third.
Yeah, I wrestled with the sprint, and not so much the fillies. I had the same thing you did with the fillies. I thought, you know, CC came up, had a good year, and then landed the big punch in the biggest race, you know, so... I went the same way there. I went Aloha West, and I probably did it three times in my head at least before I landed on him, and, you know, kind of for the same reason. He won the biggest race. Jackie's Warrior had a great year. Again, loved seeing him in Saratoga. I ended up covering both of his wins at Saratoga, which were fun stories to write. Maybe I held it against him a little that it was mostly that it was 3-year-olds that he ran against, but you know, again, you wouldn't sneeze at that campaign or knock it at all. You know, I just thought Aloha West came through in the Breeders' Cup, so I nudged him above just a little bit.
No, yep, fair enough, and there'll be plenty of that. This actually reminds a little bit of last year, right, with Whitmore, and you know, having to. You know, tip the scales and Vekoma, right? You had kind of a similar scenario to a degree. That gets us to turf. And Joe, it always seems no matter how obvious it might be, and some of the results are no matter how distinct, there's always a category that just you find eye crossing and.
That's a great description.
this, you know, that's like that opening, and it's like the preacher and the doing the service in The Big Chill. you know, this is one of those times. I was completely confounded here, and I usually don't let the Breeders' Cup be a deciding factor if it doesn't have to be. But I ended up putting Yabir on top with Space Blues. It was either going to be Space Blues or Domestic Spending. I ended up with Space Blues, and I used Smooth Like Straight third for his, you know, very solid, you know, full year against good horses. He didn't win as much as you'd like, but that was a, you know, a campaign to me that deserved a recognition.
Yeah, he was Smooth Like Straight at some year when you look at it and just ran. He were, you know, again, you don't, it doesn't always work that way, but if the Eclipse Award was trying to, you're trying to award the most consistent campaign, he gets it, right? I mean, he ran so well all year, still, you know, only comes up with the one win, but what a racehorse, you know. And I end up, for a lot of these categories on those PPs they send us, I just start drawing lines through horses that, you know, I'm not going to include. And that, as I ended up with lines through almost all of them, and I'm like, okay, I got to start over. So I did the same thing you did. I went Yabir, and then Colonel Liam and Domestic Spending, and you know, you could have put them in either order at that point.
Yep.
I really wanted to give Smooth Like Straight something, but I didn't, and, you know, I felt bad for him because he had such a cool year, but it was that kind of category. And there were three full pages of horses to look at on the PP, too, which was something.
Agreed, and you know, I thought that, you know, like I said, I had domestic spending written in second at one point. And then I, you know, the more I looked at Space Blues, I said, you know what, that I usually don't do that. I it was more or less, you know, to me, interchangeable. But Yabir having the two starts, that goes a long way. And then you juxtapose it with the Phillies and Mares. I didn't expect when I opened this up and sat down over the weekend, I didn't expect to put Warlike Goddess as my choice in the female turf, but I did. And Love's Only You second and Shantisara third.
Yeah, I'm like you. I didn't really know who I was going to when I opened it up. And I, you know, then the more I looked at her campaign, Warlike Goddess, you know, I that's who I landed on too. Just, you know, it was good all year. And ran really well in the Breeders' Cup, you know, and didn't win, but ran really well, you know, and just you reward the campaign, I guess. And I went My Sister Nat second and Alfika third. Again, I had a hard time trying to decide who to do there for sure.
I had Sister Nat and Alfika, Shantisara. They all took turns sitting third in my list. We went over Steeplechase, so we'll go to the human categories. The owner breeder, the power of numbers, Joe, usually doesn't sway me. You know, I don't typically look at the earnings and make those the, you know, the 1-2-3s. However, the year that Godolphin had as an owner and breeder is just astounding. I know there's people that are bending over backwards to not vote, you know, for them in one or the other or both. To me, it seemed impossible to justify going against them in both.
It was quantity and quality, you know. I'm kind of with you. I try to look past the numbers sometimes to find people, you know, or even horses that had years worth rewarding. But a lot of times the numbers, like the overall numbers, won't necessarily be the same as the, you know, leading earners or stakes winners or graded stakes winners or champions or whatever you want to put it. But yeah, they had a year where they led overall numbers and had, you know, just depth of quality horses.
You went for owner. I went
with both of them in the same spot. Went with them in both categories. And you know, I don't necessarily subscribe to, oh, it's got to be the leading earner in each category.
No. Well, I put Seth Klarman second and Judmont third on the owner side, and on the breeding side, I put Stone Street second and Calumet third.
Yeah, I did Stone Street, and then I put Andy Moore in there. I know, you know, it's too small of a breeding numbers to kind of be an Eclipse Award winner, but when you look at what you can do with a, you know, with a small group of mares and come up with a horse like Nick Go, it's pretty impressive. It's, you know, it's what everybody's trying to do.
No, agreed, and it fits that, you know, very frequently. I've done the same thing where, you know, somebody like Jane Lyon, who, you know, you could conceive, you know, what she does, you know, that same, you know, that same premium. I mean, she's got a bigger broodmare than a small, it's more than a small operation, but on the premium front. The jockey side, I think it's finally Joel Rosario's year. Is this acclimation? I mean, after a couple of years that he easily could have been, if people, speaking of going, looking past the dollars and cents simply.
Yeah, I voted for him, and I as you started talking there, I'm like, they think I voted for him another year or two. I just have to go back and look. Mm-hmm. But, that year he put together is Eclipse worthy, you know, and he rode all over the country, he rode different kinds of horses, you know. I don't think you can argue with that at all.
I'm just looking at my previous, I voted for him last year, and if I'm not, I may have voted for him the last two, potentially. I've got, where's my, I thought I had, multi-year. Well, maybe like I said, I just have last year. Yeah, I just have last year's. I put Luis Saez second and Flavien Prat third. And when it came to the apprentices, Jessica Pfeiffer, the more I looked at everything, I said, you know what? Jessica Pfeiffer deserves to win this.
Yeah, it's I went John Araldo there, but okay. I think either one of them had really good years, and it's the jockey one and the apprentice jockey sometimes become a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a, just how you approach it, you know, like to me the apprentices, you got to approach it numbers somewhat. I think the jockey, the overall jockey, you can look at some of the other things, you know, and apprentices, nobody seems to have quite the dominant apprentice year that they used to have. So it gets, you got to do a little more digging, I think, sometimes. But you know, that's okay. You know, more often than not, we see people build off of that apprentice jockey eclipse into a career. You know,
no doubt. I went Pfeiffer, Geraldo, and Charlie Marquez, who I put third. Takes us to Trainer. And this is not going to be an open and shut case. I see a number of people that have been talking up Charlie Appleby votes, and I don't sort of buy into that, but you know, he certainly, his numbers of what he sent to North America, it was scary, and you know, I appreciate that he's part of the Godolphin juggernaut for the year, but I didn't see him as a, you know, the North American award candidate. I went Brad Cox, Steve Asmussen, and Michael McCarthy got my you know, salute for a third place vote, because when I looked down at my ballot and I saw CC and Smooth Like Straight, I said, you know what? Why do we not acknowledge McCarthy as having a tremendous year?
Yeah, no, and won a Preakness as well. So yeah, that's a cool point. And I like trying to think like that, you know, a little bit outside the box. I'm with you. I can't really, as good as Charlie Appleby's horses were in North America, you know, he's not a North American based trainer. I just can't really quite go there. I went Steve Asmussen. Obviously made history. He led the country in wins. He's right there in earnings. He's right there in grade one wins. He's, you know, just right there in graded wins. And I thought it was kind of a fitting vote. Brad Cox two and Chad Brown three. I like the idea of somebody like Michael McCarthy, though. I think that's is a cool way to recognize a good year, you know, or, you know, a top level year from a barn that doesn't always, you know, get that kind of recognition.
And I've done this on a regular basis, where that third, you know, that third slot, I, you know, try to just say, especially when I see when their names show up, when horses of theirs show up, you know, in the body of the ballot. Jay Pribman, right, opened my eyes to that method years ago. Jay explained how he, you know, filters down on the and drills down on the human categories by, you know, seeing, you know, who's jumping off the page on the rest of the ballot. Which gets us finally, the minute left, Horse of the Year, your selections, Joe Clancy.
I think, I went Nixco, Essential Quality, Latruska. I mean, to me, Nixco was pretty easy. I mean, you could have put it in pen from the beginning, you know, when you opened the ballot. But a really good campaign, deserves Horse of the Year, and, you know, answered all the questions, basically.
No doubt about it. I went Nixco, Latruska, and when it came time for that third slot, I did not automatically put Essential Quality in. I came very close to putting the Mean Queen third. If you think of Horse of the Year as the horse who captured the public's fancy and imagination and was talked about, the headlines and conversation about the Mean Queen was pervasive and really notable. And I I'm almost sorry I didn't put her third, just to reinforce how exciting it was to have her do what she did and gain people's interest in chasing and in racing.
I like it. I would have gotten yelled at as a jump guy for doing that. But,
see, I could have pulled it off.
No, you're right. She certainly did. I mean, she was certainly an attention grabber for sure. And it bodes well for the season coming up. I think actually that she's sticking around and hopefully can live up to it after her first campaign.
Well, what else bodes well is the fact that this is horseracing.com is having Saturday editions, it seems, on all the big Saturdays, and it wasn't even that big of a Saturday this past week, and there it was. So this is horseracing.com until it becomes the Saratoga Special in July. Joe Clancy, great way to kick off the year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joe Clancy, everybody. And, of course, we follow up with Joe to say E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly on Sunday in Tampa. We've got to pull up and send you out into the race day. Thanks to Joe, to Tony Lacey, to Mig for a fabulous hour, Mike Trombetta, and Matthew O'Connor. A lot more to do tomorrow, which will include Andy Serling and more recapping of the weekend. I got lots of stuff here that I haven't even gotten to yet. Enjoy the day, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.